The Theosophical Society presents Clara Codd in a talk entitled Meditation.
Look, I was going to talk to you about meditation, but I think I hadn't better. Or shall I talk for a minute or two and finish it another day? Apparently quite a large number of people think it's a very difficult and queer sort of proceeding. As a matter of fact, a perfectly natural proceeding. I think you've got the wrong idea of it altogether. And what's more is I think that most people think that meditation is syncing with their brain. Well, that's a very, very preliminary part of it. But you know, if you only use your brain, you will never, never find God. Your brain is incapable of contacting deity. You have to get beyond your brain. And what's more is, I think you've got to use the whole man. You see, what is it you want to do after all? What you want to do in a dim fashion that we don't understand, most of us, we want to draw near to the eternal beauty. Now, HBB will tell you that the eternal beauty, the only way you can reach it is through that spark of him which dwells within ourselves in the very depths of our own nature. He said you can't jump over him, so to say. He is the gateway to God. So the first thing that any one of us got to do is to become in tune more and more with the spark of the infinite within ourselves. Now this is the spiritual consciousness. And HBB will tell you that it dwells in the heart. I must sort out all these bits I've got here because she talks about that. She says, the spiritual consciousness is centered in the heart. The intellectual consciousness is centered in the head. So she says, what you have to do is to develop the spiritual consciousness in the heart. It will then illuminate the head. You know, the best way to understand it is the free halls in the voice of the silence. I've just written a book about this, and it's got a lovely picture of the free halls that an artist painted for me in Johannesburg. There's the hall of ignorance, like a brown arch, then there's the hall of illusion, with full of flowers, and then there's the hall of wisdom, which is light, with an angel standing in it. That's the higher self. Now, you know, real wisdom, real truth, isn't anything you can intellectually see or discover. Everybody thinks that. They think you've only got to see a good idea and you've got it. It's nothing of the sort. That's a perfect illusion. But you see, HBB says, the first thing you've got to realize is, on the path of this path, that you're ceaselessly self-deceived. You see, this is the hall of ignorance. Now why? It is the hall, says the voice of the soul, in which thou art born and which thou wilt die. And the instrument which brings us into touch with the hall of ignorance is the physical body, which is really a straw house of symbology. And the symbology of the physical body is marvelous. This is why it's called the microcosm. If you understood the symbology of the body properly, it would put you in touch with the cosmic powers. But however, going back to this question, you see, what you see is at any moment in the physical plane is phenomena. Now, the derivation of the word phenomena is the Greek, meaning the appearance only, not the thing itself. The changing appearance, it changes rapidly the whole time. What do you see with your physical eyes and your physical senses? The passing, temporary, changing appearance of things only. So you're constantly self-deceived. Oh, we better get used to that and sit down in it, so to say. Now then the next step, she said, is to realize that you can, with effort, gain the truth, but she warns you the truth is not intellectual. Do you see? Now, this is the hall of ignorance. What's the next hall? The next hall is the hall of learning, the psychic plane. And it's full of, it's a marvelous hall of place, says the voice of Saturn, and full of wonderful things. But under every one of the flowers and beauties, there's a serpent coiled. It's also, it's not the truth. But now, this is the hall you first enter when you start meditating. When you were to close your eyes there, where are you? You see, if your eyes are open, you're responding to the physical plane objects. You know, from the events of life in the physical plane objects, we form mental conceptions. You see, we've got two sets of nerves in our physical body. We've got motor nerves and sensory nerves, and the sensory nerves are bringing us impressions. You know, you ought to be sensitive to the world. You ought to be able to register impressions. There's quite a lot of us that are insensitive to a very great deal, because the whole of life is talking to us the whole time. Now, those impressions come into the inner consciousness, and from them we form conception. That again holds us prisoner. I got this idea from Krishnamurti. You know, your body is a prison house. All you know about the surrounding universe is what you see through the five windows of the senses. And what you see is very partial and incomplete. Well, but from that you form mental conceptions. Now, the mental conceptions are 1 degree better, but they also keep you a prisoner. I call the mental conceptions the skylight in the prison. Through the skylights, you glimpse something of the sky, and the sky shines back to you. Now, says HBB, in the life of meditation, your mental conceptions grow wider and wider and wider, until one day you escape from them altogether and come face to face with the whole sky. But you see, there you're keeping you a prisoner as long as you don't think they're the reality. So I'll go back to that. And she said, when you shut your eyes, you're on the mental plane. What are you looking at? You're looking at all sorts of pictures. Pictures that are memories, and pictures that are wish fulfillments and hopes and aspirations. I think your mind, you know, is the light that lights every man that cometh into the world. It's like a lantern you hold on the road of life. Some people have got a little lantern, some people have got a big one. Now, if you throw the lantern behind you, you see pictures, which you call memories. I'm just going to warn everybody not to look too often behind them. Do you remember what the voice of the silent says? Look not behind, or thou art lost. Kill in thyself all memory of past experiences. You generally remember something where your emotions are connected, something that's not solved, either a sorrow or a great joy. Well, if you're remembering them always, there's a flow of your soul energy going backwards. Now then, if you cast the lantern of your mind up ahead of you, what do you see? You see more pictures. You see desires, wish fulfillments, aspirations, hopes. Or you say they aren't real. They're only imaginary. They're just as real as the other ones. You think the other ones are real because they've happened, and these are not real because they haven't happened. Not yet. They're much more formative on the evolved man like you and me than the other ones. You know, Valgiji found that out. He said that some form of yoga is a necessity for the modern man, because he lives more and he's more affected by the future than he is by the past. So now there you and I are looking up at what, and isn't it telling the most extraordinary thing about it? When you see ideals and this sort of thing in the future, you know, you can't see anything that isn't germane to your own nature. So what you're really doing is clairvoyantly seeing yourself in the future, what you have the capacity to become. Don't take somebody else's ideal, because you know in your depths of your soul what you can become. You see as through a glass darkly what you are. Now, do you see? Now, couldn't you hold the lamp of your mind steady for a moment on a thought or a picture and hold it steady and keep still? What's the result? Things flash in. You know, Thérèse Lisieux called them lights. And the fruit of that is understanding. So I think that the lantern of your mind, the function of it is memory, right memory, imagination and understanding. Shall I say observation? That's what Krishnamurti said. And I remember Dr. Besson saying the same thing. The beginning of meditation is attention, observation. Well, now you see, once somebody asked Krishnamurti that, and he said, what's the function of the mind? And Krishnamurti said, to observe and to understand. Not to make up your mind about things. Now, don't you go make up your mind about things in a hurry. Don't go laying down the law to anybody else or yourself. Because the minute you do that, you shut the door. No more understanding is possible. You must keep your mind open and fluidic. You can have a temporary conclusion, but remember it is a temporary conclusion. Now, one thing that is enormously used in meditation is the imagination. Now, is everybody despising the imagination? But you know, think what it means. It's the image-making faculty. Some people can make images. Well, everybody makes them. You know what the Master said? We all people are current in space with a host of our thought creations. This is the subjective world. But in meditation, the subjective world is gradually growing more and more clear to you. After death, you know, the subjective world becomes the objective world. You live in a world that you have created yourself. And I'd like to emphasize this, that the gateway of meditation and the gateway of death and the gateway of sleep is the same gateway. Now, when a great yogi, for instance, passes into samadhi, of course, that's a very far away, tremendous state of meditation. He's left his body by the same gateway as death and sleep. So it's the same gateway. SBB tells us that when we're asleep, our ego is much more illuminated than it is when we're awake. You don't know what a prison house the physical body is. So one of the very first steps, oh my gracious me, I ought to talk about this for weeks, the very first step is to get used to thinking I'm not my body. Sit loose about your body. And then you enter the hall of illusion. Now what I want you to remember is, you see, you create pictures. If you've got a power of visualization, you can see the pictures. And that's a comfort to you. If you haven't got a power of visualization, you make them, although you don't see them. Till you can practice the power of visualization. Mrs. Besson used to tell us how. Look at a rose and then shut your eyes and reproduce it. If you're reading a good book, visualize the events as you go along. Visualization can grow. Now you see, you're making all these thought forms. This, for instance, the Master says, you remember, your best method, he says, is to create a picture, the Master, within yourself. And remember, HBB said, the spiritual consciousness is in the heart. Now, what I want you to realize, don't think of your physical body and your physical heart. Can you all get a sense of withinness? Now that's why when I'm taking meditations, I try to get you to feel your radiating aura. Because do forget that you're a physical body. Get a sense of within. That's the withinness that the Master talks about. And then you see, and with that, as he says, your best method is to create a picture of him. Doesn't matter how you create it or what it's like, because it isn't him, but it's a window to him. Because after a time, said he will send his voice. Now, what he means is not that he will talk to you clairaudiently, but that his atmosphere, his presence, will fill the image you've created. It will become alive. Have you seen that happen in a photograph? You look at a photograph of somebody you love for a long time, and it becomes alive. It'll even seem to move. You know, you can even, that picture in your mind can even smile. But you must remember that the picture is only a little window through which you're glimpsing something of the eternity. Because one day it'll be a much better picture and a much bigger one. You see, so you've got to use the imagination. And I think another thing is that I think you should use your feelings. I think there's too many of us that bottle up our feelings. You know, your mind is the form builder, it builds the engine. But the power which makes the engine go is the emotions. The word emotion means the motive force. Now, some people can build a very good engine but doesn't go because they haven't got enough motive force. Other people can't build a good engine and the motive force is jetting out like steam over in all directions. Now, if you can build a good engine and you've got a controlled motive force, there's nothing you can't do. I would try and feel. Well, it's quite easy to feel if you've got a good visualizing power, because as soon as you see something really beautiful, your heart naturally responds. Remember where it says in Lord Tennyson, we needs must love the highest when we see it. Now, says Patanjali, one way of realizing unity with God is by dwelling on that which is dearest to the heart. Take what to you is dearest to the heart and look at it. And if you find your heart responding, let it. There's nothing in the world so elevating, so purifying, so illuminating as pure emotion, pure unselfish emotion. I wish that all of you could feel that a lot more than you do. Because, you know, perhaps you do when you're young, then when you get older you don't. Bhakti, if you like, that's the great way. It's the wings of the soul. Well, sometimes I can put it like this. You remember the voice of the soul and says your soul is like a bird in a cage. It's mute and doesn't sing, doesn't fly. You've got to break the bars of the cage. Well, that's all the preoccupations of life and all the things you want. And so one great step towards attaining meditation is gradually loosening the bonds of earth, gradually breaking all of them. So there's a wonderful saying in the East, when all the bonds of this heart are broken, then this mortal puts on immortality. See what you can do without. I remember Mrs. Besant telling us that she accustomed herself to do without. If somebody gave her a grand present, she said, thank you very much, do you mind if I give it away? Do you see? Do without. Loosen the bonds. Then what happens to the bird? He's got to fly. And he's got two wings and he can't fly with only one. And one wing is the mind and the other wing is the heart. Then you've got to develop the intelligence and the power of adoration and worship. Well, the love of the beautiful, that's what it really is. and then you've got to fly. And I think the power which makes you fly is the spiritual will. The spiritual will, says Patanjali, is the steady effort to stand in spiritual being. That means the path that you carve for yourself, the trackless path like the bird, is just your intention. Your intention that never wavers. It leads you through many births and deaths. That's the path, that's the golden thread of Ariadne. If you've got that intention, you're on the road. No matter where you are, how you're getting on. If you really have, you see. And then you remember what says in the Bible, draw nigh unto God and he will draw nigh unto you. Draw nigh with your whole self, not a bit of yourself. I'll go back to the bird flies, he's got his wings developed. And you ever watched a lark go up, 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 up? You can't see him anymore, but you can hear him sometimes. Now I've heard that when the lark gets very high, he steadies himself like this with his little wings. So there comes a time, mind you, these things come after years, there comes a time when your whole being steadies. I think this is what the Catholics call the first prayer of quiet. And it's like the lark up there, you see. And that's the first touch of the mystical response. And you know, that's something that you can't get to order. Now the Catholics will tell you it's the grace of God. You've got to go on preparing for it, but when it comes, who knows? But when it does come, it's the grace of God. It's because it's been made, you've made it possible. And so this is the way HBB put it, said that higher self is longing to pour himself down to his personality. But he cannot do that till the personality has adored and worshipped. Now, don't you be too mental about it. It is better to adore and worship. You see? Because if you adore and worship and long, you will forget yourself. But if you're very mental about it, you will always be thinking, well, I wonder how I'm getting on. Am I doing the right thing? And if you think like that, then you stop for the good and all. Use your imagination. Remember, you're going within. It's like a long journey. It's a long journey that will take you more than one life. And it's a journey you don't know what's around the next corner because you've never travelled it before. And it's a journey where no man leads you and no man can tell you what to do next. Because the pathway is your own soul unfolding. And everybody's a unique being and unfolds a little differently to everybody else. But if you trust life and you have that steady intention and you can love the beautiful and you can adore and worship, you'll be safe. You see? So I would think about something that was really beautiful and love it.